And our special guest tonight, Dr. John Brandenburg. We're going to take your calls with him when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Dr. John Brandenburg. John, we were talking about how people years ago truly believed in something more miraculous on Mars than they do now.
Oh, right. Because of the work of Percival Lowell, who thought he saw canals, and other people were reporting them also, they thought that Mars was basically Earth-like and inhabited. And it has, you know, polar caps, it has dust storms. So if in the Victorian era, they looked at Mars and they looked at the moon. They said, well, the moon is obviously moon-like and Mars is Earth-like. So everyone assumed it had life on it. That was the kind of paradigm of the day. And then because of the work of Percival Lowell, this continued up into the 20th century. The U.S. government, by the way, is used to dealing with scientists and knows a lot of them are blowhards. And so that, you know, the U.S. government is used to scientists telling them one week that space travel and nuclear weapons are impossible, and then having this fact dropped on their desk the next day as a, you know, a reality brought by some other country. So the U.S. government basically, even though scientists said there's no chance of life on Mars, continued to believe that they might find a dead civilization there. And they were, the original documents that founded NASA was a RAND study, and they said, oh, you can expect to find artifacts in the solar system on the moon or Mars from other civilizations. So this was discovered by Don Ecker in their original RAND study. So they expected to find a dead civilization on Mars. And then when they found the face on Mars, and of course also the pyramids of Elysium from Mariner 9, Mariner 9, by the way, came back and took additional pictures of the pyramids of Elysium. And that only kind of came out during Sagan's Cosmos thing. By that time, they'd already photographed the face at Cydonia, and they photographed it twice during the Viking mission. And they found the pyramid. And they also found all the Xenon 129 in the atmosphere. So they just put two and two together. And the U.S. government basically knew of the possibility of a vast nuclear explosion on Mars and of a dead civilization by 1976.
Do you think it bothered anybody in government, John?
Oh, I think it did. I think they kept it very quiet because, remember, we were in the Cold War.
Right.
And it was, I've worked at U.S. government labs. You have never gone through an international crisis till you've been in a U.S. government nuclear weapons lab, where you have people walking around who are part of the chain of command for nuclear weapons release, and they are obviously just dying of stress.
Oh, my God,
and,
yeah.
And you could just feel the, you know, I felt like being in a submarine going down near crush depth. You could feel the submarine shuddering.
Yeah.
The pressure building up.
Water leaking.
Water leaking. And at the time when we began this investigation, I was very alarmed at the level of, you know, we were in a very intense confrontation with the Soviet Union because of Reagan, and which, you know, I applauded, but at the same time, it was really scary. And we got as close to a nuclear war in November of 1983 as we had been since the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it was secret. No one knew it. NATO staged a big exercise, and the Russians thought that it was a preparation for an invasion. And they put all their nuclear forces on alert. And so the Russians were feeling very panic-stricken that year because Reagan was coming on strong and they were not used to that. And so they reacted by kind of panicking. And they took the safety off, you know, the nuclear systems and were ready to pull the trigger, and we only found out about it later, and they kept it quiet. So, but it's almost like psychically we had picked this up, and so we really pursued this Mars thing. And somebody at the Sandia Labs where I was working saw some of the isotope data from Mars and commented to me, oh, someone nuked him.
Wow.
I didn't know what it was that he was fixating
Yeah,
on. I found out later it was the Xenon 129 that was the weapon signature.
Now,
And
there seems to be a lot of similarities in Mars and in Earth, specifically Egypt. Cairo means Mars.
Yes, it does.
Now, how do we explain that, these similarities?
Well, I believe in what's called the Jungian collective unconscious, that the human race is all kind of connected. You can't keep things really secret for
right.
very long. The rest of the human race will pick them up unconsciously. And well, I think that
we're all on
I
the same that, wavelength.
I think we're all on the same wavelength. And I, you know, I don't want to sound spooky. I'm trying to be
scientific. Oh, go ahead.
Well, anyway, yeah, I think Jung was right. And I think, in fact, that we're kind of part of us knows what happened on Mars. In fact, there was a Kirby science fiction comic done in 1958 that showed the face on Mars.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Absolutely right.
And they found out that Mars had been destroyed by somebody. So part of it, it's like part of the human race subconsciously has known that Mars was a site of tragedy. And so it's, by the way, the U.S. government apparently wants this to come out now. I think they've decided it's time.
But they don't want to announce it.
No. waved me ahead.
Then people will say, how long have you known? Why haven't you told us? Why are you telling us now? They don't want to answer those questions.
No, they don't want to answer those questions. We're probably going to see anti-gravity technology here in the next 10 years, George.
Yeah.
The government will just say, oh, well, we invented this.
I'm sure clever. Boeing already has it. You know what?
Oh, I'm sure. And, people will ask, well, was this actually invented by the Nazi Germany and traded to us for some plane tickets to Argentina by some of the researchers? And the U.S. government will say, I don't know what you're talking about.
We've got a whole bank of calls here for you, John, so
let's
go to them. Let's go west of the
Uncle
Rockies.
Sammy wants to go to Mars.
Yep. Tom in Port Angeles, Washington is with us now. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, John.
Hi.
Hey. Great to hear somebody from the West Coast, up in the Pacific Northwest. I grew up in Oregon.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's big country. What was the city or town?
Medford.
Medford.
Down near the California border, but it was nice and rainy all winter.
And sure plenty is. Of good food, plenty of good water, and you're upwind.
Absolutely. Great place to grow up.
That's a neat place. Yeah, big country down there.
Yeah.
Anyway, John, there might be something else that could account for the xenon and the krypton.
Yeah.
And on this very show, because George is so thorough at bringing in a lot of cool, very neat guests.
Good.
There is a phenomenon that's documentable, or theoretically documentable, that if you have a high-speed comet or asteroid
mm-hmm.
that's been developing charge as it goes around the sun,
mm-hmm.
and it is carrying that charge into the charge of a planet and going zooming right past it, very close, right?
Yep.
You get this anomalous discharge that's absolutely immense. And
other people talked about this kind of electric universe kind of idea.
You bet. And it was so big that the guy was crediting the digging of the Valles Marianas, the big canyon on Mars, right?
Yeah.
It was big enough to do that, and that accounted for why we didn't see upheaval in the region, why we didn't see anything, any big rocks or you know, exit points out of it. It just vaporized a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a very interesting hypothesis, you know. And I'm a plasma physicist, so I love this sort of stuff. But, you know, I believe kind of the basic tenet of electric universe is that you know you get big electrical phenomena just like you get lightning storms on Earth. if you're doing a theory of the Earth from scratch, you would not predict big lightning storms.
No.
You'd say well, there would be rainstorms and snowstorms. You'd leave out all the lightning stuff, but it happens. And now, could this have been accounted for? Let's say a big plasmoid was ejected from the sun, usually like a big smoke ring full of electric acid.
Well, we'd get hit too, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah. We have gotten hit with these things.
Yeah.
And in fact, if we get hit with another one like we got hit in the 1800s when
the Carrington event, yep.
Down
goes the
grid. Telegraph lines start throwing out sparks,
that's right,
setting fires. If we get hit with one of those, there goes your cell phones, there goes your GPS.
There goes my radio show. What are you talking about?
Oh, no, George, you'd figure out how to get the radio.
I got a report on that event. We've been talking about it for years now, John.
Yes. Well, we must prepare for these events. You know, the nature can sometimes really amaze you. Insulate the grid. We have to put surge protectors on everything.
Yeah.
We all have to have emergency radios kept in metal boxes so that if something like this happens, we can bring them out and listen to you, George.
That's right.
Explaining things.
The primordial soup in the universe, I think, is the same. It's everywhere.
Yes.
And therefore, life is going to be very similar to what we have on Earth.
Oh,
somewhere.
The stuff of life is everywhere in the universe, everywhere we look. And not only that, George, they're basically finding that every star has planets now.
Yep.
Every star.
Many planets.
Many planets.
And water and everything else.
Water, amino acids, everything. The universe should be crawling with life.
I think if you had a zillion Earth-like planets that had the same kind of complexity and the same distance approximately to its star, you're going to have some kind of life there.
Oh, right. And if Mars is any indication, it's going to develop intelligent life similar to us.
That's right.
Building similar things to us. In other words, we're a lot more typical of the universe. We think of ourselves as exceptional, George, but we're actually C students, and we're pretty average.
Well, you know, I think religion, God-level religion, by the way, but I think religion kind of muddies up some of this because,
well,
you know, in terms of, you know, they're softening now. The Catholic Church is softening.
Yes, it
is. Where, you know, it's talking about the belief in extraterrestrial life. But years ago, the thought of extraterrestrial life beyond Earth was uncalled for with the Catholic religion.
I mean, it was.
God made us, and that was it.
Well, I was in churches growing up where I was told there was no extraterrestrial life.
We were alone.
We were alone. That this was where God's whole drama was playing out, was on this planet. And anything else to talk about life anywhere else was, you know, you're not of the true faith. And I will just say that I myself, when I discovered all the stuff about Mars, the nuclear weapons employment there, I fell into a depression, and it almost became clinical. I started having nuclear war nightmares, and I have three children and two grandchildren, and I would see them in the dreams, and then there would be nuclear weapons going off in the distance. And so what I did, George, is I made a very thorough study of the Bible. I decided to focus on cosmic good, so I wrote a book called Cosmic Jesus. And it turns out that no, God didn't tell you everything. And no, he didn't tell you about extraterrestrial life, except if you read the New Testament in the ancient Greek,
mm-hmm,
which it was written in, and then it is clear. Because Jesus tells his disciples, go out into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. The word for world is cosmos in the Greek, and it means exactly now what it meant then, the whole universe. Very sophisticated.
Let's go to Josie in Wisconsin. Hey, Josie, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. Hi. About a year ago, I called in and half jokingly said that we were previously living on Mars, and then we destroyed the atmosphere on that planet and came here, and we're doing the same thing on this planet.
I know. We have to. We're kind of messy. We don't clean up our room.
Oh, it's more than messy, in my opinion. The thing is, I think the game was over when we invented nuclear weapons. I really believe that. Also,
well, we haven't used them on ourselves so far.
What about Japan?
Oh, well, I mean, since they were first employed, By the way, my Uncle Barney was supposed to be part of the invasion of Japan. He had just gotten done fighting with Patton's army all across Europe. They loaded him on a ship, and then he docked in at New York, and they put him on a train, and they were taking him and all his buddies to be part of the invasion of Japan. And he thought he was going to be dead. He said, my number wasn't up in Europe, but it's going to be up now. He and his buddies just, they were completely fatalistic. And so, you know, we can get into the debate whether that was necessary or not, but it saved my Uncle Barney's life, and he taught me electricity. So I'm grateful to him.
That's the way to do it. Josie, thanks. I'm surprised mankind has not used nukes since World War II, honestly.
Well,
John,
when I was going to graduate school, we had these computer science types telling me, this is during the 70s, one thing they told me was that cocaine was not addictive. I knew better,
yeah. But
they had to find out the hard way that it was. They also told me that the human race, because of computers that they were working on, would be obsolete by 1980 and extinct by the year 2000. I thought, you know what I thought when I heard this? I thought, oh, we'll have a nuclear war before that.
Yep.
So once you... extinct. And so somehow the human race has 9 lives. Call it God, call it dumb luck. We seem to have dodged a lot of bullets.
And are we going to continue to dodge them, though? That's the point. That's the question.
Well, one of the reasons I'm pushing this discovery on Mars, George, is I've raised children, there's nothing to stop misbehavior better than distraction.
Should we colonize Mars?
Yes.
You think so?
We have to become spacefaring, George. We can't just sit here and wait for the Daleks or whoever to show up here. And we have to become spacefaring. We have to become like Star Trek.
We should be terraforming the planet right now, then, shouldn't we?
Well, we're figuring out how to do it. Mars was alive. We want to kind of resuscitate it.
God, won't it take a long time? Hundreds of years?
Oh, I don't know. Well, we'll have big nuclear-powered transformers for the atmosphere. We can take the CO2 and turn it into...
just like pumping plants, huh?
Yeah, and turn it into oxygen, capture the carbon.
That would be amazing.
You have enough power, George. You can, if you harness nuclear power in a clean, safe way, you can do anything you want to a planet.
Well, that's true, too. So with your position papers...
We can make this planet a good place for everyone to live on.
Well, that's overdue, John, isn't it?
I know.
With your position papers on what you think happened to Mars, where do you take this next? What's next for you?
Well, I just keep, I'm just going to keep pushing it. I'm going to go to other scientific conferences this next year and, make everyone listen. I'll just say, look, this is an intelligence test. So far, the human race is failing it.
All right, stick with us, John. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls with you. In the meantime, folks, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, definitely do that, and you will find how remarkable that is. The Twitter's fun because we send out little notes and messages every day about things on the show and things that you should keep on top of, and just go ahead and do that. So we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. John Brandenburg and your final calls. Next hour, we're going to take a critical look at those in the field of ufology with Jack Brewer. His book, The Grays Have Been Framed, looking forward to that. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. John Brandenburg with us, of course. John, are you concerned that we could get attacked by extraterrestrials?
Well, the reports from ufology are not encouraging. I heard you say the grays are framed. I'm a little skeptical of that statement.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have examples reported from ufology that some of these ETs are not very friendly at all. We should become spacefaring and develop space technology, and we can deal with the universe as it is. I mean, look at Captain Kirk on Star Trek. He knows he's not alone in the universe. It doesn't frighten him in the slightest. He knows that God, guts, and guns will see him through. And we should have the same attitude. we have to move out and engage the universe. We're not going to just sit here and wait for them to show up.
We should defend ourselves, though.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, when I complained to a friend in ufology, I said, there are no facts in this business. There are only reports. And he said, that's right.
Have you seen that space shuttle video, STS video?
You sure have.
Yep.
I was showing that to people in Washington, D.C. At one point, I showed it to a bunch of retired admirals and generals.
What did they say?
They were astonished.
And you clearly can see something being launched at an object that takes off at an incredible speed.
It was obvious somebody was shooting at somebody, and one of the leading generals there said, where are they from? And I said, they're reported to be from Zeta Reticuli, 40 light years from here, and he said, long supply line.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he just turned to one of the retired Air Force generals and said, this can't be true, because we would know about it.
There you go.
And that was the Air Force general said, you're right. They can't possibly have kept this from me. I was in the Air Force.
The video's real. I don't know what it is.
I know. I assured them the video was real. In fact, InstaPetro had gotten it from the actual NASA downlink. Not a ham radio operator. So I saw that stuff, and it didn't look like all sugar and spice and everything nice out in the cosmos. That's for sure.
No, that is for sure.
Now on Mars, we have found out just how bad the universe can get, and we have to take a lesson from this. We must become spacefaring. We have no choice. In fact, this is why I believe the government is allowing all this data to come out. They believe it or not, even secret government people want the human race to survive. I mean,
well, let me ask you this, John. Are you
run things?
have you been asked to get this out by the government?
No, they basically just waved me ahead, though. I mean,
they look the other way.
They basically, it was like they just said, go ahead, do it.
You have their blessing.
In a sense, yes.
Yeah.
They gave me, that's all I needed was just one.
Indirectly.
Okay.
Let's go back to the calls for you.
Yeah, sure.
Byron is in Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hello, Byron, get us going here.
How's it going, guys? I have an awesome story for you tonight.
All right.
Great.
All right. There was three planets in our solar system that inhabited life, and there was an alien attack from outside of our solar system, and they did it in the method of an asteroid. And when this asteroid came into our solar system and whizzed past Earth, it gave us our polar caps. When it whizzed past Mars, it ripped the atmosphere off of it, giving us what we have today. And the third planet, which was attacked, exploded. And it was a planet in between Mars and Jupiter, giving us our asteroid belt today.
Mm-hmm.
You guys heard that story?
Interesting theory.
Yeah, that's I think the planet's called Phaeton. That's the one theory. The only problem with that is that if you take all the asteroids in the asteroid belt together, including Ceres, you only get something about the size of the moon. So it wouldn't have been a And part of it may have disappeared into Jupiter and on Mars, because Mars basically defines the inner edge of the asteroid belt. So most scientists are very skeptical of the idea of a major planet in the asteroid belt. There may have been some larger objects like Ceres with actual molten cores that broke up in the asteroid belt. But all I'm doing is quoting you kind of mainstream science, which, of course, we are all a little suspicious of. But at least in this area, I'm inclined to go with the mainstream views. For one thing, I haven't studied the asteroid belt much. I've just confined my stuff to Mars, basically. So that's all I can really say is that people have really, there are some advocates for this idea, and your ideas sound more like also like Velikovsky. And he had some interesting ideas, but most of the astronomy mainstream has not embraced the idea that there was a planet in the asteroid belt. They do believe that the moon was formed by a collision of the Earth and a Mars-sized body. That's pretty catastrophic right there.
That's right.
But that happened very early, they think. So I'm sorry, I guess I don't find the evidence. The stuff I'm proposing on Mars is based on a lot of evidence that's been gathered by space probes and from meteorites from Mars. I base my theory on very as much evidence as I can, scientific evidence and data. And other people have looked at the so I don't know enough about the asteroid belt to really comment much further, but just say that other people have looked at the Phaeton idea, and they don't think there's enough stuff in the asteroid belt.
Artifacts are scattered all over that planet.
Oh, on Mars?
Yeah.
Yes.
All over the
place. Yeah, the place crawls. It was apparently a widespread. I mean, I was the editor of the special Mars issue. You had just George Haas, one of the other investigators on your show. He's found more stuff. All you have to do is look in certain areas, especially near the Northern Ocean shoreline where apparently everyone lived, and you'll find all sorts of artifacts. And now the rover, which the big rover, the Curiosity rover in Gale Crater, that's near the ocean shoreline. That's where they found this Aztec head, too. And also they found other very strange.
It's a great picture.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's just the tip of the iceberg. We have, you know, all the stuff in Cydonia, and then also this Galaxis Chaos. We have another face and ruins of what looks like a city. So I'm about as satisfied as a scientist can be in terms of raising issues, helping to raise issues, and then having the government, you know, the U.S. government, go take all these pictures.
That's right, for us.
For us, and then releasing them. If there was really a cover-up, you wouldn't have seen any of this stuff.
Let's go to Hartford.
In fact, either the U.S. government is hopelessly incompetent in carrying out cover-ups.
Well, that could be.
We wouldn't have too much trouble believing, but in this case, they wouldn't have released this stuff. In fact, they wouldn't have sent any more probes to Mars if they wanted a real cover-up. Instead, they have sent probe after probe now, and they're taking all these wonderful pictures and releasing them.
Yeah, more data. Let's go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut now. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Happy New Year to you.
You too, Bill.
Thank you, George. Dr. Brandenburg, first of all, Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year to you, too.
You're welcome.
Let me
say right off the bat, and George knows this, I'm an amateur astronomer. I've been an amateur astronomer for 50 years. I made 65, George's age. I want to talk to you about the face on Mars, which I agree with you totally, and Richard C. Hoagland and all the other researchers, that the face is real, but it's never been for me the face that convinced me it's real, although the face is real.
Sure.
What convinced me is I want to talk to you very briefly and ask a question about two other objects that are northeast of the face, about approximately 5 miles to the right and upward of the face, northeast of the face,
mm-hmm.
that any mainstream scientist, astrogeologist especially, or astronomer, would have to admit could not have been formed geologically by natural processes at all. And that is very short, A and B. A, the approximately 500-foot tetrahedral five-side pyramid
right.
that's on the rim of a crater that's about a mile or 2 miles in diameter, and B, a cliff that's located on the debris, or in other words, the ejectile.
Oh, I know just what you're talking about. They call that the cliff or the wall.
Yes.
And it's lined up with the face, so that it's almost as if somebody wasn't happy with the whoever potentate decided that the face should be built to honor them decided they should build this wall so it would have a nice silhouette.
Yeah, but what I want to ask you, an important question, those two things, the five-sided pyramid and the cliff, have there been any more modern Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter high-rise images of both those?
I haven't seen, we have seen some. But they just released the five-sided pyramid at Cydonia Mensa. They have released new pictures showing this square doorway. You can see them on the website under the Aztec Head article. So there is a square collapse zone on one. It looks like brickwork. But there is another, I think you're also talking about another pyramid-like object right on the edge of a crater. It's on the debris apron of the crater, as if, and it has to have been built there. And we had good pictures of that from Viking. The one new picture I saw from one of the high-resolution pictures shows that it's really pretty eroded.
Does a five-sided pyramid occur in natural possibilities?
No. These things are, these things are obviously artificial. You don't get that crisp lines. And we also found that on the five-sided structure, by the way, is a standard. I mean, look at the Pentagon. The Pentagon is based on the fact that a lot of fortifications in the early 1800s were built with five-sided symmetry. Fort McHenry, for instance. And then often they will have what you call a stellation, an outside fortification, kind of completing one of the points on the five-sided figure.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also on the pyramid at Cydonia Mensa, which is five-sided. So, and that's on the website, by the way. It's called a stellation. And so he is right. The five-sided pyramid and these the objects, there's a cliff and then another pyramid-like object built on the edge of a crater. These are completely, they just cry out that they're artificial. There is no way geologically you can make those.
No.
I mean, you have a crater. If they predated the crater would have blown them to pieces when it formed. And you can't have geologic forces make a straight wall on the rim of a crater, debris apron, or a pyramid. It just doesn't happen. So all you have to do is kind of look at this. In fact, I will say that it was actually obvious. Anyone who studied carefully the Viking pictures from 1976, which was a superbly technically performed mission, it was obvious from that there was a dead civilization on Mars. All of these other people who say, oh, we needed new pictures of everything, that was good, and I'm very glad they've taken them. But if you just go back to the original Viking pictures, you just say, oh, that's fairly obvious. This is what this is. And, in fact, I believe that's what the government concluded.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Chris, in California. Chris, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Real quick thing. You mentioned not having nuclear weapons used anywhere. When General MacArthur was in charge of Korea, one of the reasons Truman let him go was he's afraid that MacArthur was going to use nuclear weapons on both North Korea and China. But that's another whole show. My question for your guest tonight is, in the Renaissance era, all the astronomers were looking up and seeing canals on Mars and everything, and they were all marveling. What the hell happened to the canals? And in the second,
The canals are. The human eye is not a precise instrument, and one of the things the human brain does, because of our fierce tribal past, anyone who can recognize faces, even wearing war paint in the woods, or straight lines like a spear or an arrow flying at you, those people would live longer and tend to propagate their genes to future generations. So as a result, the human eye brain system is pre-programmed to spot faces and straight lines. So what happened in the astronomy in the 1800s, when the telescopes got very good, is you're looking through a soup of the Earth atmosphere. So the Earth atmosphere is constantly distorting the image. It's like looking through water. And every once in a while, the atmosphere would clear up. In fact, Percival Lowell had a telescope, big telescope in Flagstaff, Arizona. He had, in a desert, he had one of the best sighted telescopes on Earth. And when you look at Mars, the human eye tends to connect dots because it's looking for straight lines. And so that's what it did. And there are enough. Mars has a very mottled-looking surface, and apparently the human eye was just connecting dots, the human eye brain system.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they didn't have. You can't take good pictures through the Earth's atmosphere because it keeps moving around and distorting things. It wasn't until we got spacecraft to Mars that they finally saw there were no canals. However, there were water channels.
That's right.
There were water channels every place showing that Mars used to have rivers. And so in a sense, in a kind of poetic sense.
He was right.
He was right.
Yeah. He was right. And Chris,
you were right all along.
We don't have time for your second question, Chris. We are out of time. Dr. Brandenburg, again,
George.
Thanks. You're always welcome on the show, John.
Thank you, George. And it's been a great honor. It's always a great honor to be on your show. And thank you. You had great, great questions and great callers.
Dr. John Brandenburg's website, lifeonmars.pub, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And he's got some great books on that. What an incredible story. Absolutely incredible. Up next, we're going to continue with our theme on ufology with a different kind of a twist. So make sure you're part of the program and don't touch your dial right here on Coast to Coast AM. And also, don't forget, you can always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com.